You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday, the 11th of February, 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioalbion.com. First off today, I guess I should issue a bit of a correction. Yesterday on Aerian Britannia, I said that apparently a white British man had died of coronavirus. Now, I'm not entirely sure whether he's died or whether he has just contracted the disease. He definitely has contracted the disease, and I thought, well, it must have been somebody that had died from it, because otherwise they wouldn't be telling us who it was. But it seems that there are quite a few people who have said that they've contracted this disease and have been interviewed, so it may be that it's somebody that's still alive, but it's definitely somebody of British ethnicity that has contracted this this coronavirus. And I've also heard today that it's far less likely that somebody is white could contract it. But I have yet to do any further research into that. Anyway, I just wanted to point that out because I didn't want people to be repeating something that I wasn't entirely certain about. Well, I've got a couple of news stories today. I don't know if we'll get time to get into both of them. The first one concerns yet another terrorist being released from prison and going on to plot other attacks. Now, of course, we've had two attacks that were actually carried out. One of them by a model reformed prisoner that was put forward as being an example of how de-radicalization can work in prisons, and he then tried to behead his caseworkers and thankfully was stopped from his rampage by brave, courageous young white men. And also we've had a similar thing happen recently with this other Muslim that had been released from prison that was being tailed by the police because they knew that he was still a risk. And thankfully they jumped in straight away, but he was still able to stab two people. And this is the situation that we're in now. We've got people that are being released from prison because that's the law. They do have to be released. And yet they're still a threat to the public. And straight away, they go straight back to trying to carry out terrorism. The obvious solution to this would be to deport these people to a country that has Sharia law. I mean, surely they could come to some arrangement with Saudi Arabia, send them to Saudi Arabia, or send them to Afghanistan, send them to Bahrain, Brunei. There are quite a few countries around the world that do have Sharia law, and these people would probably be quite happy there. And, you know, you could maybe even send them to Pakistan, and they wouldn't be so much of a threat there, would they? Because they would then be in a country that goes along with the, or at least goes along most of the way with the beliefs that they have. And now we have yet another one that has been planning on carrying out another terrorist attack. And this guy actually looks like he might be white. The Independent have got a picture of him, and he looks like he might be white, a not very bright young white lad. But in the court images that have been created by the court illustrator, he does look like he's non-white. And there's also pictures of him from when he was in prison, I think, his profile picture's taken, and he does look non-white there. So I'm not quite sure whether he's white or non-white, he's definitely an Islamic extremist. A chicken shop worker has been found guilty of planning new terrorist atrocities after being released from prison over another attack. Mahia Sunath Chowdhury had slashed police officers with a sword outside Buckingham Palace while shouting Allah Akbar in August 2017. I mean, that's just incredible, isn't it? He was obviously trying to kill police officers whilst yelling out the Islamic catchphrase, and yet he was found innocent. He denied attempting an act of terror and claimed he was just trying to make the police shoot him dead because he was depressed. After being cleared by a jury, Chowdhury was freed from the prison in December 2018 and hit the ground running for new attacks. I mean, what does this say about the gullibility of juries? Now, I pointed out that this lad doesn't really look like he's that bright, but he was clearly bright enough to deceive this jury into believing this nonsense that he was depressed and he was just trying to get the police to shoot him. Even if he was trying to get the police to shoot him, I mean, isn't that the goal of these suicide attacks, that they end up dead, and in actually ending up dead, they also achieve something for what they believe in is good for their version of Islam? And this is why they call themselves martyrs, is because they hope to die whilst carrying out some kind of attack on the non-believers, the kuffars, which they believe Allah will be pleased with and reward them once they are in heaven. I mean, that is the mindset of these people. So how this jury could find him innocent when he's pretty much told them exactly what he was doing? He said to them, I was hoping the jury would shoot me dead. That's why I attacked the police officer yelling Allah Akbar. Well, whether the end goal of that was him being dead or whether the end goal of that was him attacking the police officer is irrelevant. It's still a jihadi attack, isn't it? And yet the jury found him innocent. And once he was released, as they say here, he hit the ground running for new attacks. Woolwich Crown Court heard that he discussed potential targets, including a gay pride parade, Madame Tussauds, and a London tourist bus, with undercover police officers who were posing as fellow jihadis. Now, of course, we also have these undercover police officers that are trying to infiltrate the nationalist movement. And the simple way to deal with this is if anybody is trying to encourage you to do anything illegal, just instantly say, I do not want to be involved in this. And if you continue, I'm going to have to report you to the police. That's the way to deal with this. If people want to protect themselves from this, I mean, you can argue, well, it's a little bit, it's not quite right that they are encouraging people to break the law in this way, but how else are they going to catch these people? How else are they going to catch these jihadis if they don't say, well, look, here is this route open to you to carry out terrorism? That's the way they catch them, and obviously they use that against nationalists. And any sensible nationalist is not going to want to be breaking the law anyway. So hopefully they won't be able to catch any nationalists like this. But that is a way that you can tell if somebody is working for the intelligence services, is that they will be trying to encourage you to do something illegal, because that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to root out extremists that are prepared to break the law for a political aim. That's what terrorism is, violence in order to achieve a political aim. While consuming both Islamist propaganda and material by right-wing extremists, including Tommy Robinson, he told associates that the Buckingham Palace attack really had been an act of terror and that he deliberately deceived the jury that had cleared him. So this is what he was telling his friends. This is what he was telling the undercover police officers. Now, there are two things that are interesting about this. It's interesting that instead of calling Tommy Robinson a far-right extremist, they are calling him a right-wing extremist. I would suggest that Tommy is right-wing. He's not far-right. I don't understand why they say he's an extremist, though, because he doesn't support violence. He doesn't support terrorism. He's a civic nationalist, basically. He is pretty forthright in his views against Islam. But why does that make somebody an extremist? And again, what we see here is we see that this guy is actually quite clever, because what he's trying to do here is he's trying to say, oh, Tommy Robinson incited me to carry out my Islamic extremism. And he also cited Robert Spencer from Jihad Watch. And his reasoning for this, he said that Robert Spencer and Tommy Robinson, they understand Islam much better than the imams in Britain. So what he's trying to do there is he's trying to blame the whistleblowers. He's trying to blame the people that are pointing out the elements of Islamic doctrine that are responsible for encouraging these would-be terrorists, basically. That's what Tommy Robinson and Robert Spencer and the rest of the counter-jihad do. They highlight these verses in Islam and these teachings and these imams that are encouraging this. So that's what he was saying encouraged him to actually do this. Now, there's another thing that it could be. It may just be that he doesn't understand Arabic and what the Islamic extremist imams are saying, but they would probably have subtitles anyway. So what he's doing here is he's playing into the press narrative that Tommy Robinson inspires this violence. And also we have to be wary of this, because this is being reported in The Independent that this is what he was saying. And we know that at the trial of the Welshman that drove his van into some Muslims outside a mosque in London, and it was reported that he was inspired to do this by Tommy Robinson, and it was in all the newspapers and it even got brought up in the Houses of Parliament. When Tommy Robinson paid for a court transcript, the judge said nothing of the sort. His name wasn't even mentioned. So that was a stitch-up, basically, by the media to link Tommy Robinson to that. So we can't even trust this report from The Independent that this is actually what this guy said. Chowdhury repeatedly praised other terror attacks and claimed to be radicalising children who came into the Peri Peri chicken shop where he worked in Luton. And again, this is the problem with having these people interacting with the public. I mean, they will come out of prison and the probation office wants them to find a job, and they find a job and they're working with the public. And of course, then it gives them a chance to radicalise the public, or if they're perverted, then it gives them a chance to groom young girls, because a lot of the grooming gangs, as we know, have centered around kebab shops and chicken shops and fast food places. It's where they find their prey. And it looks like this is where some of these extremist Muslims, where they find recruits for jihad as well. In the months after his release from prison, he engaged in physical training by acquiring wooden swords, practicing stabbing techniques, enrolling on a shooting training course, and obtaining a replica pistol while seeking a live firearm and ammunition. Chowdhury told a friend that all non-Muslims, even pregnant women or children, were fair game, and that killing a soldier or police officer would be instant paradise. And you can see here that these guys really have no honour. I mean, how can it be honourable to kill pregnant women or children? And when you think about it, the British people have been very, very kind to these non-whites. We've allowed them into our countries. We've brought them in. We've housed them. We've clothed them. We've fed them. We've educated them. We've treated them to our healthcare. And a certain portion of them repay us for that by saying that even our pregnant women and our children are fair game to be murdered. How can this be seen as honourable? You know, I always thought that in Arabic culture that they were quite famous for being good hosts. And, you know, if they're having a marriage ceremony or something and strangers are walking past, they will invite the strangers in to take part in the marriage ceremony. The same in Afghanistan with the people that live in tents. If they meet somebody they've never met before, they invite them in. Their culture is that they need to be good hosts to the people that they meet. And yet here you have this idea that even if somebody has been a good host, they're fair game and you can kill them. If they're not Muslim. I mean, the two don't add up, do they? And yet this is what these extremist Muslims believe. And it actually goes against the rest of their culture that they do this. And yet it is something that they do. We have to face up to that. And as much as we have information about how hospitable they are in their culture, we also need to be discussing this belief among them that if you are a non-Muslim, if you are a kafir, then you are fair game to be murdered. On the 20th of June, 6 months after his acquittal, a covert recording showed him telling his sister, Sneha Chowdhury, that he was quitting his job. Right, so here we see that he has a sister, she has the same name, Chowdhury and Sneha, so obviously it's not an assumed name that he took on when he converted to Islam, so he must be non-white to have a surname like this. When asked why he was quitting his job, he told her, "I'm doing another attack, bruv. I'm serious, bro. It's about time now." So the police must have had a recording of him saying that. The siblings were arrested by counter-terror police in Luton on the 3rd of July and told that their home and Chowdhury's car had been bugged for months. So thank God the police did this, basically. I mean, the police knew that even though he had been acquitted by this jury, that he was still a threat to the public, and they acted appropriately. But when you think about how many of these ex-jihadis there are in prison, I mean, they're saying that they've got 50, I think, that are due to come out in the next 6 months, that are all as high a risk as the last one that grabbed a knife and tried to stab two people. And it costs thousands, tens of thousands of pounds every day because they have to be tailed at all times. They have to be watched at all times in order to ensure that the public are kept safe. Surely they could just pay Saudi Arabia to take them. Surely that would make more sense. I mean, these jihadis would love that, wouldn't they? They could be a citizen of the country that contains Mecca, Muhammad's homeland. It would benefit them, and it would benefit us. It would be a solution to this. Investigators had records of Chowdhury's conversations, his internet activity, the extremist propaganda he had viewed, and the purchases he made in preparation for the attack. So they were well prepared this time to take him to court. The defendant had viewed numerous speeches by Al-Qaeda ideologue Anwar al-Awlaki and other hate preachers, ISIS propaganda, and guides on carrying out attacks with vehicles and knives. You see, and this is the difference. I mean, he can say, oh, I've been listening to Tommy Robinson. Tommy Robinson doesn't give out guides on how to carry out attacks. That's the sort of thing that you'll find on these jihadi sites. That is extremism. But pointing out the threat that jihadis pose to us, that's not extremism. That's the equivalent of being a whistleblower. He denied all charges and claimed that talk of an attack had merely been jihad banter, or for attention. So you can see how lightly he treats this, that he thinks it's you can just talk about jihad banter here. And in actual fact, the way that he uses the term there to say jihad banter, that means that his understanding of jihad is not that it's some kind of spiritual battle where you have to overcome your negative desires and the drive to go along with the animal side of your nature, but that he understands that jihad means making war against the non-believers, because there are some that will say, well, jihad means this spiritual battle. In actual fact, I mean, 70 or 80 years ago, before we had this problem with terrorism, that was the understood meaning of the word jihad. And there have been, nationalist philosophers that have spoken about jihad against the more animal nature that we have. But that's not the understanding that he has here, because by using this term jihad banter, it means he understands that jihad means making war on the non-believers. Chowdhury told the jury that he had assimilated with terrorist prisoners at HMP Belmarsh during his time on remand for safety, having met the Parsons Green bomber and other like-minded brothers. And again, see, this is the problem with putting these jihadis in prison. It means that they get to radicalise all the other non-whites that go in there. And there is quite a lot of temptation to do this. I mean, when people do bad things, they feel bad about it. I mean, everybody does have a conscience. And then they go into one of these prisons and they've had a life of drug dealing or being in gangs or whatever. And they meet up with these Islamic extremists in there. And they say, well, you can make up for all those sins by carrying out jihad, by attacking some non-whites, and then all your guilt will be gone and you'll be given a reward in heaven, and it becomes a way for them to come to terms with the bad behaviour that they've carried out in their earlier lives. And you get a similar thing with people that go to prison and they come out Christian, but when they come out Christian, they usually come out as evangelical preachers and against drugs and bad behaviour, whereas these Muslims, when they go in there and they meet up with these Islamic extremists, they come out as Islamic extremists, and our prisons are basically turning into jihad training centres. And that is what happened here. He met up with these other terrorist prisoners. Why weren't they put in solitary? Obviously, putting somebody in solitary confinement can cost a lot of money, and it's also considered to be torture. So once again, why aren't we just sending these people over to Saudi Arabia? Why aren't we making an agreement with Pakistan to take these people? I mean, they're not going to be a problem there, are they? They will be living under Sharia law, which is what they want. He claimed that he was not truly seeking to obtain a gun and felt pressured by the undercover officer who offered to help him. Well, he should have said, no, I don't want a gun then, shouldn't he? And it's quite simple, isn't it? If somebody's offering to help you do something illegal, then they haven't got your best interests at heart, have they? They're quite clearly trying to entrap you into doing something illegal. And they certainly can't have threatened him to do this, because if they had threatened him to do this, then he could use that in court. But they will obviously use pressure to try and get people to commit an illegal act. I mean, that's their job. That's their role, basically, is to tempt people to break the law. They want to be arresting these people before they actually carry out a terrorist attack. And that's how they try and work out the sort of people that are likely to carry out a terrorist attack, is by tempting them to carry one out. I mean, it is so simple. I mean, we really should have no nationalists at all that ever get caught up in this stuff, like this base thing over in America that was obviously an undercover setup. How any nationalist could fall for that, I don't know. If somebody's encouraging you to break the law, then you don't want to be around them, and you should report them to the police as well if they're plotting with you to break the law. And then you are protected. Then you can't be incriminated alongside anybody else that gets involved in these sort of plots. Chowdhury added, I was scared he might kill me, he might kill my family. Yeah, very, very believable that they were saying that they were going to kill him. There will be recordings of all these interactions, so all he has to do is point out the interaction where this took place, which of course there won't be, because I doubt very much whether that interaction actually took place. He told the jury that he believed in a form of jihad, but not until the Antichrist comes alongside Jesus in the end times. And again, that's obviously not believable, because he comes out with terms like jihad banter. "That's the battle I want to be fighting," he said. "I don't want to do any terrorist acts. I don't believe in it." And this is after already trying to attack a police officer with a sword. Chowdhury claimed he had only undertaken physical training to lose weight so he could find a wife. So that was why he was playing with wooden swords, is it? But the jury rejected his explanations to find him guilty of preparing acts of terrorism, disseminating a terrorist publication, and possessing terrorist information. So finally, the jury have done the right thing. Prosecutors told the court that Chowdhury had been viewing and posting extremist material before coming into contact with the undercover officers and was not pushed or tricked into attack planning. Within days of his release, the defendant was posting on Instagram a story extolling the virtues of martyrdom for Allah and an image of the police officer who had wrestled the sword away from him outside Buckingham Palace, PC Ian Midgley, calling him a cuck. Duncan Atkinson QC told jurors. And that's interesting as well, isn't it? That he's using our terminology for cuckolds, and he's now using this terminology to describe this police officer. I mean, in what way was that police officer a cuck? I mean, the term itself, as it comes from cuckold, from cuckoo, from parent birds looking after what they think is their own offspring, and it's not. It's another type of bird entirely that has actually kicked the bird parents' offspring out of the nest. I mean, members of our government are cucks all over the white world for seemingly preferring non-whites to their own indigenous population and replacing us. But how he could be calling this police officer a cuck when the establishment found him innocent? They obviously favoured him over the indigenous white people of Britain. I mean, what a ridiculous term to use. That's the sort of thing that makes me think that maybe he's a bit simple, but at the same time, he's been quite clever with his defences here. Duncan Atkinson QC continued, "He had in reality hit the ground running on his release from prison and ready to pick up where he had been forced to let off in 2017 when his attack at that time had failed." Commander Richard Smith, head of Scotland Yard's Counter-Terrorism Command, said officers received information about Chowdhury's extremist posts a week after his release. So he was straight into this right after being acquitted. He was wanting to go out and carry out terrorism again. He acknowledged that it had been an exceptionally difficult balance to gather enough evidence to ensure a conviction whilst mitigating the risk he posed up until his arrest, just 3 days before the Pride in London parade. Again, this is similar to this guy that attacked two people with a knife. I mean, all he did was just go into a shop, grab a knife off the display, and then start trying to stab people. And luckily, the police had been tailing him, and they were 8 seconds, I think it took them, to actually disarm him. But just how many police officers was there involved in that? And there must have been a similar number that were involved in this. And instead of wasting all of this effort on them, just offer them a chance to go. I mean, what they could do, they could say to them, instead of your prison sentence, you can give us your passport and we'll give you a Pakistan passport and you can go and live in Pakistan. I have to credit Mark Cullett for that idea. It's not one of my own, but I mean, that's a sensible idea, isn't it? Just encourage them to take citizenship of another country, and we could quite easily make a deal with these other Islamic countries to take them. "I am relieved to see him convicted," Mr. Smith added. "I believe Chowdhury to be an extremely dangerous individual who is committed to kill and maim members of the public for no other reason than that he is possessed of a hate-filled ideology." But he's going to go, as soon as he gets out, he's going to be wanting to do this again, isn't he? And it's going to go on again. It's the same with these 50 people that are going to be released from prison within The next 6 months, the government are trying to retroactively apply legislation to say that people that have been accused of terrorist offences cannot be automatically released after 6 months, and it will have to be 9 months instead. So it just means that in 9 months' time, we're still going to have the same problem instead of in 6 months' time. And however many years, well, I hope he gets years, however many years this Chowdhury gets, he's still going to be just as dangerous when he comes out. And even if he goes through rehabilitation, how are you going to know that he has actually been rehabilitated? The jihadi attacker before the one that stabbed two people, he was a model of rehabilitation. He had been used as the cover boy, as the photograph for the company that was responsible, the private company that was responsible for doing the de-radicalizing. He was their model citizen. So how are you going to tell when somebody has been rehabilitated? You can't. The only solution is to deport them. And it really shouldn't be that much of a problem with it, because they would quite clearly rather be living in an Islamic country. And countries like Pakistan that are third world, you could make that a part of the aid agreement. You could say, well, you're only going to get our foreign aid if you agree to take these extremist Muslims that wish to live under Sharia law. Chowdhury's 25-year-old sister cried as she was convicted of one count of failing to disclose information about acts of terrorism and cleared of another count of the same charge. The siblings, both of Kirkwood Road in Luton, will be sentenced at a later date. And of course, we know that there is going to be more cases like this, because we know how many they've got in prison that are going to be released. And what about the ones that are going to be released the year after that? What about the ones that the intelligence services haven't managed to detect yet? What about the 20,000 that are suspected of being involved in this activity, but don't yet reach the threshold to have constant police surveillance? I mean, all of them should be encouraged to move to an Islamic country, don't you think? Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.